The Justice Department releases information on 52 drug war cases it reviewed. We'll get the reaction of the National Union of People's Lawyers. The Senate fails to detain two executives of Formerly Pharmaceuticals who were cited in contempt in the ongoing Blue Ribbon Committee hearings. Well, that Senate investigation again belittled by President Duterte. And we'll tackle some of the issues hounding the camp of presidential contender Francisco Isko Moreno Dumagoso with Acción Democrático Secretary General Leon Flores III later on in the program. Hi, I'm Carmina Constantino. Dateline Philippines begins right now. Hey, thanks for joining us. And for those of you watching us on YouTube and on Facebook, glad you could join us today. We begin with this story. The Justice Department has released details on 52 drug war cases it reviewed. That's amid widespread calls for government to clamp down on alleged extrajudicial killings committed by the police. Our very own Mike Navallo, now on the line to tell us more about this. Mike, go ahead.
Hi, Carmina. The Philippine Justice Department released this morning details about some of the cases reviewed by its drug war review panel, but the glaring findings showed the absence of key details and reports on police drug operations. It also showed drug suspects dying of multiple gunshot wounds, with one suspect sustaining no less than 15 shots in a police operation. The 20-page table contained details about 52 cases where the Philippine National Police had earlier found administrative liability in some 150 police officers. Hounded by international and local pressure to investigate the drug war killings with a looming International Criminal Court probe, the PNP in the middle of this year forwarded these cases to the DOJ for its second drug war review. The ICC pretrial chamber last month gave its green light for the ICC prosecutor to conduct a formal probe on the drug war killings in the country. Early this month, Justice Secretary Manado Guevara announced they found potential criminal liability on the part of the police officers, but held off disclosing key details or making the report public. He assured the public the NBI is conducting its case buildup with the end goal of filing criminal cases in court. Of the 52 drug war cases the DOJ reviewed, an overwhelming number, or 37 cases, were drug bypass operations where suspects allegedly resisted arrest and fought back using their own guns. But even the PNP's own Internal Affairs Service doubted the self-defense claims raised by the police, because in at least 7 cases, the suspects accused of resisting arrest or nanlaban tested negative for gunpowder nitrates in paraffin tests. There were no ballistics or paraffin tests, autopsy reports, death certificates, SOCO reports, or other documents available in some 27 cases. In 2 cases, the firearms were subjected to paraffin tests, not the suspects themselves. Another finding which could raise questions in the self-defense narrative of the cops is the presence of multiple gunshot wounds, which caused the death of drug suspects in 21 of the 52 cases. By multiple, there were at least 2 gunshot wounds, with one case, a 2017 case in Cagayan, finding no less than 15 gunshot wounds on the head, trunk, and upper and lower extremities of the suspect. There were no details as to the number of gunshot wounds in 25 cases, but in 5 cases, the DOJ noted the suspects were shot at close range. Some of the cases reviewed by the DOJ in its second drug war review happened in 2016, but no criminal cases have yet been filed in most of these cases. One case, that of teenager Carl Arnaiz, has reached the court, with the Caloocan Regional Trial Court issuing warrants of arrest against 2 cops in 2018. The DOJ earlier said around 150 policemen were involved in these 52 cases, but they refused to divulge the names, citing due process considerations. They were found administratively liable and needed penalties ranging from reprimand and suspension to demotion and dismissal from service. Suspension was meted out in 35 cases, while dismissal from service of the cops involved was imposed in only 8 cases. It is not immediately clear how many cops were suspended or dismissed from service, because aside from the DOJ's refusal to release their names, it also did not provide the number of cops involved in each case. The NBI is now conducting case buildup for possible criminal charges. The cases covered by the DOJ's second drug war review were from all over the country, from Cagayan to Zamboanga. But notably, there were only a few cases from the National Capital Region where most of the thousands of drug war killings were recorded. The DOJ has yet to release similar information on the 300-plus cases it reviewed under the first drug war review. Navallo said yesterday that DOJ is releasing the information in the interest of transparency to inform the families of slain drug suspects and possible witnesses who might testify in the case. But yesterday, rights groups NDPL and Karapatan already scored the DOJ for going through the motions, accusing the agency of window dressing. The drug war review is a major commitment of the Philippine government to the United Nations Human Rights Council. Carmina?
Yeah, Mike, just one question here. We're only looking at 52 cases here as released by the DOJ. What made them choose these 52 cases? Why only 52 out of the many?
Carmina, these 52 cases were the cases forwarded by the Philippine National Police from the records of the Internal Affairs Service. The Internal Affairs Service conducts administrative liability checks. I mean, they determine if there are administrative liabilities in every operation of the police where there were suspects killed. So these 52 cases were the cases the PNP provided to the DOJ because there were administrative liabilities. But Justice Secretary Minardo Guevara earlier said that they are also trying to look into the other cases, thousands of other cases where there were no administrative liabilities found among the police officers who were involved in police operations. But the question now is, Carmina, how will they do that if they have the time? Because that involves thousands of cases. They only managed to review 52 cases, took them a couple of months. And the first drug war review, some 300 cases, it took them more than a year. So that's a question of how they can manage to finish the drug war review before the term of President Duterte ends. Carmina.
Thanks a lot. Mike Navalio there joining us on the line. Take care, Mike. Keep safe. Now, on to the Philippine Senate's probe into government's pandemic spending. Authorities failed to detain two executives of formerly pharmaceuticals, that's Mohit and Twinkle Dargani. The Senate Sergeant-at-Arms says the siblings were not found in any of their registered residences last night. He says efforts continue to arrest them. The formerly officials were cited in contempt by the Senate Blue Ribbon Committee for failing to submit subpoena documents. On Tuesday, Senator Richard Gordon revealed some formerly and budget officials committed violations over the purchase of allegedly overpriced pandemic supplies. Senator Richard Gordon also implicating President Duterte in the formerly controversy. Gordon accused the president of being behind what he is calling a grand conspiracy to steal public funds.
This grand conspiracy could never have happened without the imprimatur of the executive from beginning to end, from meetings with Farmali to the appointments of selected people who are extremely loyalty to him is the basis for the appointment and not competence.
In his latest public address, President Duterte again dismissed the Senate's probe, calling it a political stunt ahead of the 2022 elections.
Problema kasi sa Senate natin, trying hard maghanap ng mga isyo na may nangungurakot, stop using this issue in aid of election. Bring your arguments to the proper court and I will answer you. Hinahamon ko kayo. Gawin ninyo yan.
A setback in the Philippines' COVID-19 contact tracing efforts. The number of contact tracers in the country has dropped by about 20,000 as their contracts ended.
Yung ating mga contact tracers ay medyo bumaba ang bilang dahil yung pong kontrata ng mga 20,000 contact tracers ay natapos na.
Lorenzana did not disclose whether government is planning to renew their contracts or if they will sign up new contact tracers. The country's contact tracing has been described as one of the weakest links in government's pandemic response. The Philippines looking to further ramp up its COVID-19 vaccination drive. Vaccine Chief Carlito Galvez Jr. says government wants to inoculate at least 1.5 million Filipinos per day before Christmas. Data from Reuters shows the Philippines averages about 374,000 doses per day.
Is to achieve a safe Christmas and national election. So our objective is to vaccinate at least 50 million of priority population before Christmas. And then all the NCR 10, the key cities, at least 70% fully vaccinated before the end, before Christmas. And also vaccinate at least 70% of the total population before the election period.
As of October 18th, nearly 24.5 million Filipinos have been fully vaccinated against COVID-19. That's 31.76% of government's year-end target. The Philippines looking to inoculate more than 100,000 minors in its pilot implementation of the COVID-19 vaccination for those aged 12 to 17. A representative from the National Vaccination Operations Center says there are already enough Pfizer and Moderna doses. The vaccination of minors will be available in 23 hospitals for the second phase of the pilot run, which starts this Friday.
For phase 2, may 23 hospitals na tayo, including po yung mag-continue na phase 1 hospitals. We had several din na mga LGUs due to limitations ng spaces ng hospital have negotiated with us to use several of their nearby facilities na sa vaccination site. Pero ang isang kulatilya lang, malapit lang talaga sila sa hospital.
President Rodrigo Duterte orders the redistribution of COVID-19 vaccine brands to different areas to prevent what he calls favoritism over some brands. In his weekly late-night address, President Duterte again reminded the public not to be selective, as many still prefer Western-made vaccines.
Do not do some favoritism there. Kasi masisira talaga. You will just spoil everything. Huwag kayong mamili. Sabi ko kay Secretary Galvez pati sa ibabalasin ninyo. Yung isang karton, itapon mo sa isa dito. So, magdating sa inyo halo. Mayroon na naman na gusto ayaw magpa-deliver ng iba. Kung hindi Pfizer, pati Moderna. Sinasabi ko sa iyo, kung hindi totoo yung mga bakuna na itong sa Sinovac pati Sinopharm, ito yung unang nagdating, ay di marami nang patay. If they are not effective, if they are not good, bakit ngayon halos wala nang patay?
And going back now to our top story, the DOJ releasing some details of its drug war review. Let's get the reaction now of Attorney Cristina Conti of the National Union of People's Lawyers. Attorney Conti, good afternoon to you. Welcome to the program. Thanks for joining us today.
Good afternoon. Thank you for having us.
All right. Your group has called this release of information as going through the motions. Tell us, why do you think this is too little too late?
Well, first, it's the numbers. We have 52 investigations out of an admitted 6,100 killings committed in these organizations. And that's not counting those deaths under investigation that come within the scope of the drug war, so to speak, which could take the number up from 12,000 to 30,000 persons dead. So 52 out of all those numbers, definitely too little. And too late, because these killings have been occurring since 2016. We've documented some killings related to the drug war as early as May, right after the announcement of as president. Now, the thing with this report is also with regard to where and when these cases were submitted to the DOJ. So it's just now that they're submitting this to the DOJ. And it turns out it comes from the EES, which is like the police human rights department, right? So it's their internal affairs in the service, which has already investigated these cases. Hmm. And what's clear is there has already been administrative sanctions for some, actually for most of them. But then what we have been expecting was something clearer about criminal charges. Mm. If you notice, there's nothing or no recommendation about criminal charges to be pursued. Mm. And really, this is where we come in. NUPN already has criminal charges pending before court. to be filed before the courts as approved by the Office of the Ombudsman. And unfortunately, it seems that the cases that we have are not covered by this review.
Yeah, Attorney Quanti, we just had our correspondent Mike Navallo on the line a while ago, and I did ask about that. He also mentioned that there are certain key details that are missing from the information, and when he asked about it, the justice official he was interviewing said that, you know, these details were purposely left out because this is part of the case buildup for possible criminal charges. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, if it's for security or upon the request of the families, then that would have to be observed, that would have to comply with. However, from what it appears, from the very beginning or from the first thing, the ultimate purpose of releasing this was one, to inform the family. So it seems that the families have not even been informed of this review or of this re-review, because again, these are cases that have already been filed or heard before the ECAS. And then they just went through the documents probably. And from what I'm looking at, it would have been a paper investigation, literally looking at the documents if they were complete and what the documents stated. And that's what I'm inferring from these observations. They said, these documents are missing. These kinds of documents state so and so. But the deeper or the analysis that you would need for case building is not here. And what they're telling us is that they're going to submit this to the NPI for case building. And there are four things important in case building, really, Carmina. One, you have to know who your complainant is. So who is the complaining party, which would be the families of the victims. From what's written here, you just have the victims. So they're going to have to find who these complainants are. Second, who are the respondents? So probably that's the redacted party. They know that already from the documents. But second, what would the charges recommended be? To go to court, you would know it's a homicide case or a murder charge or what else. And then lastly, what would be your evidence? So those are the basic elements of a case before you go to court.
So
and
having
evidence, they just told us what they're missing.
Yeah. So having said that, Attorney Quanti, would you now therefore say that there is nothing in this report that would point to decisively end the deaths and the impunity in this country because of the drug war?
I would say to that extent that this will not stop the killings. But, of course, every little step goes a long way. And in this case, they've told us how the police are operating. And this is a government agency. I guess this is for the first time. Because you've had the police always saying that, oh, we followed protocol. Mm-hmm. Oh, we did what we could. But now you have the Department of Justice telling them that, no, from your own documents, you did not follow the protocols. In fact, you're missing documents. You're missing protocol. You're missing like processes. Most of the observations here is that they did not do the ballistic or the testing. So this is, some people would like to call it a slap in the face, but not yet, not to that extent. But I would say a slap on the wrist. And this is a reminder to the police.
Because then one would have to ask Attorney Quanti, if this is how the Justice Department sees things now, at least for these 52 cases, what is the necessary next action that they should do?
Well, they said that they're going to submit these cases for review of the NPI for case building. Actually, after that, it goes back to the Justice Department, to the Prosecution Department, to the National Prosecution Service, for preliminary investigation in case the NBI says that there is enough probable cause to state that these cases should be for filing of murder charges against the police. But then, again, we'll be looking at individual cases. So you have 52 cases with about 150 police officers, possibly to be filed with murder charges. But what happens to policy? What does this say about policy? There's nothing in it that recommends that the police change their policies There's nothing in this that says that, or instructions to the police what to do. And clearly there is nothing here which says stop the killings, stop Top Ham, or suspend these operations.
This administration has about a few months left, right, in its lifetime. And as you correctly pointed out, these 52 cases came from the police organization, from within the police organization. This is, as you said, just a re-review of what they had reviewed. Are you confident, or how confident are you that, number one, these cases will reach its necessary end? And number two, the possibility of the Justice Department going beyond what is reported to them and really on their own conduct a legitimate investigation into the alleged extrajudicial killings due to the drug war. Attorney.
Well, for this administration, I have trust issues, so I wouldn't really want to really trust and pin all my hopes. But I do hope that Secretary Guevara goes beyond the 52 cases, looks into all the other cases, and gives us a substantial number of reviews or investigations that goes further than those already investigated by the police. So in a way, I'm asking for an independent of the police, independent investigation that the DOJ can do in the future. Now, as regards the remaining months, you know, really, you have all these documents or all this information just out there. And if you look for it, you will find it. We are ready, the National Bureau of Police Lawyers, really cooperate with the Department of Justice should they need information for the families that we are already representing and for the organization that we are assisting. In fact, we have 200 cases or 200 incidents documented. And we have direct contact with the families. That's how we build the cases, really. From what the DOJ did was go into it in between, halfway, through the EAS. But
yeah,
we do this from the ground up. So we go to the families, to the victims, and ask them for the documents that they have. Go up to the institutions or the organizations that have these documents. And build the case really from the ground up. So that would be a challenge for the Secretary of Justice as well. And I hope that he reaches out to organizations sooner rather than later.
You know, as we take a look at this information that was released by the DOJ, the police officers involved in these cases, their names weren't mentioned. The justice official being interviewed said that it is all part of due process because of, as you mentioned earlier, the case buildup. And yet, almost half of the cases that were mentioned died with multiple gunshot wounds. One bore 15 gunshot wounds. In seven cases, at least, Attorney Conti, the suspects accused of resisting arrest tested negative for gunpowder residue. One would have to ask, where was due process then? Where was due process there? And yet now they're claiming they're protecting the names of these policemen because of due process.
I'd like to raise this conceptual framework, really, that in any and all of these operations, there are two crimes. First crime would probably be a buy bust. So a person possessing, using, or whatever, drugs, or the drugs charge. And the suspect or the target would be person's victims. The second crime is the murder, is the death. And in that case, the police are the accused or the suspects. So what they're presenting to us is just one aspect. The suspect of the drug case is named in these cases. And that's right. They're not naming the other suspects because of due process, possibly. But then, clearly, the suspects or the victims, which who are now the victims of the second crime, are clearly stated here, are named here, shamed, really, vilified, because of their alleged connections to the drug trade, but then they have no no option or no opportunity now to controvert those charges. So due process is really double-bladed, double-edged for all of us.
And that the penalties, when you look through the report, most of the penalties were just mere suspensions. What are your thoughts regarding that?
Right, because that's the ES recommendation or the ES decision. What I did mention that there is no recommendation for criminal charges. Mm-hmm. With those criminal charges, if you recommend that, then you would see that there are corresponding penalties. And that's where you get months, years in prison. And for murder, of course, you get the maximum possible penalties, which
And that's what you're hoping for as a necessary end if this investigation reaches its conclusion.
Yes, for the recommendation of criminal charges, not only, here's the thing, not only for the foot soldiers, but also for those who ordered, emboldened, set the conducive environment for these kids.
Attorney,
from our point of view, this is policy.
And Attorney Christina Conti, they're a member of the National Union of People's Lawyers. We appreciate you joining us this afternoon. Thank you. You take care and you keep safe. All right, we're going to take a break now. Up ahead, a coalition of labor leaders backs Vice President Lenny Robredo's presidential bid. Dateline Philippines will be right back. Stay with us here on ANC. And we are back. You're still watching Dateline Philippines here on ANC. Here's another look at our headlines this noon. The Justice Department releases information on 52 drug war cases it reviewed. The Senate fails to detain two executives of Farmily Pharmaceuticals who were cited in contempt in the ongoing Blue Ribbon Committee hearings. And that Senate investigation again belittled by President Duterte. Presidential aspirant and Senator Manny Pacquiao will continue to give cash aid to Filipinos in need in the run-up to the 2022 elections. Pacquiao earlier drew flak after videos showed him handing out cash to those who attended his political sortie in Batangas last week. Pacquiao's camp denies insinuations of vote buying.
Sabi nga niya, hindi naman siya titigil tutulong sa tao dahil ayaw ng ibang tao or binibigyan ng kulay. So wala pong violation dyan. Yan ang sabi niya. Attorney, hindi ako titigil gumawa ng kabutihan. Nangangailangan yung mga tao natin, nagugutom, nasalantat. At kung meron man silang gustong bigyan ng kulay, sila na po yun. Basta tayo po sa team po ni Senator Manny ay tumutulong po tayo sa tao.
A coalition of labor leaders backs Vice President Lenny Robredo's presidential bid. All for Lenny, or the Alliance of Labor Leaders for Lenny, believes Robredo will help them push for workers' rights, citing her track record. The group vows to deliver at least 2 million votes for the vice president. It also hopes one of their members, Sunny Matula, will be included in Robredo's senatorial slate.
And taas pa dyan kung susumahin. The membership of the All for Lenny includes about 350,000 workers, yung existing. But we are still expanding. We are recruiting other organizations in overseas. Tapos marami pa tayong mga organization nasa informal sector na hindi pa natin naisari dito sa ating computation.
Well, issues continue to hound presidential contender Manila Mayor Francisco Isko Moreno Dumagoso. He's already seen two departures from his camp. One of the mayor's senatorial bets, Samira Gutok, also expressed dismay over Moreno's recent comments against fellow contender Vice President Lenny Robredo and the Liberal Party. To address these issues, we're now joined by the Secretary General of Moreno's Acción Democrático Party, Leon Flores III. Leon, welcome to the program. Thanks for joining us today. Good afternoon.
Thank you, and good afternoon, Carmina. Good afternoon to our viewers.
All right, I'm going to, let's first talk about Samira Gutok and what she said. She said in an interview she was melting, was taken aback in so many words by the tirades against the vice president. She further revealed that there were several events actually that she decided to boycott because she was disgusted by what had happened. So let me ask you, what is the party's stand on this? What are your thoughts regarding Samira's misgivings about how the presidential bet of the party acted the past days?
Well, the issues have been sorted out between Samira and our party standard bearer, Isko Moreno, and our party president. The thing is, she was just articulating what she felt at the time. And we have to understand the context by which she was subjected to. Take note that she came from the previously from Ocho Derecho, and she had personal relations also with the likes of VP Lenny and all the camps in that camp. So it was quite understandable that she would feel that way. But at the end of the day, she was also subjected to a lot of bullying online. She was tweeted upon, and sorry for the word, but a lot of these purists who have been bullying her online on Twitter actually wanted her to back out, withdraw, etc. The same kind of bullying that we saw with our standard bearer, Isko Moreno. So it was quite understandable at the time. There was a lot of issues, and when she was there while Isko Moreno was also giving his response, it was quite understandable because of her personal context where she's operating from.
Yeah, I'm sorry, Leon, but are you putting the blame on her that she was feeling that way only because of her personal relationships, only because that was her former party mate that the mayor was talking about? Why are you not calling your presidential contender? Why aren't you calling him out also for the tirades that he launched against the vice president? Is this something that the party supports?
Actually, if you think about it, if we look at the context by which the events leading up to that response by our standard bearer, if you think about it, there have been so many fake news coming out, and we know where they were coming from. There was a semblance of unification talks about things, and we came to the table with in good faith. We sincerely believe about the intention that the vice president wanted a unity talks and wanted to unify the non-administration forces. And at the time, I think he was also responding to the hashtag Guido Isko, which was on Twitter. And apparently that was his response. But primarily, it came as a surprise that all of a sudden, when the VP was asked about, you know, her reason for running and her decision, all of a sudden it was thrust on Isko that they had misalignments on the issue of Marcoses. And that kind of baffled us also, to be honest, Carmina, because Isko in previous interviews, even with other outlets like Rappler, etc., he has been very clear that while he does see the vision and development of Marcos at that time, the economy was in shambles. We had debt, which was unconscionable at the time. Of course, the atrocities. We have been very clear about our stand on rule of law and justice and accountability. So we didn't see where this was coming from. We felt that was an affront because we came into the table being sincere about the unification talks. And then all of a sudden, it was as if the burden of misalignment, hashtag, quote-unquote, misalignment on the stand of Marcos was suddenly an issue for the other camp. So he was just responding to it.
Yeah. What do you say then to the observation that the mayor should have responded better?
Well, at the end of the day, we have to understand where the context is coming from. And we've seen that he, all his life, take a look at his humble beginnings, he has to fight tooth and nail for a seat on the table. When he was a counselor, all these issues about him being an artista, all of these issues, even as he was vice mayor already, all of these issues thrust upon him by political elites. And that is where he's coming from. That one, he's not taking anything from the political elites who wants to stop him from running simply because their interests are perhaps stifled. Second is, we are very clear in our issue that while we need to recognize the atrocities of the past, that while we need to go after ill-gotten wealth, we don't have to be trapped into the binary narrative that the other camp is peddling. So he is coming from that standpoint, that it doesn't, this issue right now, we have the pandemic in our midst. People are losing jobs, businesses are closing, people are dying because of the pandemic. And we simply cannot turn this campaign into the binary narrative, wherein it's just a it's just something that we are so obsessed about. While it is true, we call out fake news, we call out the atrocities, we have to make sure that we go back to the needs of the people and we go back to the issues at hand. And that is where he is coming from. That is where our standard bearer is coming from. And that is the context by which he responded to that day. And in the same manner, the context by which Samira was also coming from, we understand because of her personal relations, not to pin the blame on her, perhaps she just felt that way. And we cannot invalidate those kinds of feelings. If she felt that way, we respect it. And isn't that a good thing? We have different, we cannot have groupthink, we cannot have, we need to have a diversity of ideas, because while we are a party, we are, we have people coming from different sectors, we have people coming in just now, it is always a negotiation on the basis of principles and the basis of issue. So we were very clear.
Leon, let me just cut you there, and I'm sorry for cutting in.
No problem.
What do you say to the observation that the spin now for the mayor is to play the victim, that he was bullied, that he's merely, that the context is he's been bullied all his life, and therefore that's why he reacted that way? Why play the victim, according to some? Why not just own up to his actions and be better moving forward?
One, that is not a spin. That is exactly how he felt. That is his response. It is clear that where we stand on the issue of martial law, it is clear where we stand on not being trapped on the binary narrative. We have always gone back to our platform where we need to address the minimum basic needs of our people. And look, when BBM declared, and then the good vice president also declared, look at where the narrative is now. It's all about, we're trapped again into the binary narrative of these so-called bangayan nga. And that is something that for us, we're very clear on our focus. Our Biliskilos platform really wants to go back to, we have a pandemic in our midst.
But can't you do both, Leon? Sorry to put this in edgewise, but can't you do both? Can't you address the minimum basic needs of the people, and yet also make sure that there is no revisionism, that there is acknowledgement and also resistance to what may happen again in case the Marcoses find themselves back in Malacañang, prevent that from happening, and also prevent the continuation of the status quo.
Even before that response from our party standard bearer, he had interviews already, and even after that, we are very clear that we are not brushing these issues aside. Except that from a matter of priority, Carmina, we have to really look at what matters now. We do not brush this aside. We will not tolerate corruption. We will not tolerate atrocities and human rights violations in the past, in the present, and even in the future. In case pala rin siya, he has been very clear about it. So it's not something that we are trying to also create a dichotomy. It's just a matter of priority. It's just a matter of focus. Remember, this is a chief executive who has been so stubbornly focused on the task at hand. He was able to deliver this sa pabahay niya, Base community, Tondominium, and even the hospitals, and his pandemic response. So this very stubborn focus on the task at hand is something that's really preoccupying him. And even when he's in his response, to be honest, it kind of annoys us that now the narrative is that, when in fact, this is the clear narrative that we want to put on the table, that maraming nagubuto, maraming nawalan ng trabaho. So this should be our focus. And we've agreed from the start that we will not be sidelined. We will focus on the platform. We will focus on the issues. And it so happens that for us to be dragged also, when the vice president answered that it was Isko who a misalignment on the Marcos issue, which was part of the reason, perhaps we didn't want to be made as a scapegoat as well for her decision, or as a reason or as an excuse for running, because we are just focused on the task at hand. And that is where we're coming from.
All right. And that's exactly why some people are saying, I mean, you mentioned about his work as a mayor. I want to get your thoughts on this, Leon, that, you know, some have the observation that this is exactly why the mayor is not yet ready to run for the top post of the land, precisely because of his expertise only in local politics and not on the national level. What are your thoughts on that?
Yes, I've seen some of those running around on memes that I think were commenting from certain actor named Fabregas. That's the thing. If you look at the competencies of a chief executive, it's actually more aligned to what a chief executive of the land does, of what the president does. The competencies needed in the executive actually is more aligned and more needed at this time. So you have to stand by what the good mayor has been doing for Manila, what he has done, the prototypes that he has been able to achieve in such a short time in terms of housing, in terms of pandemic response, in terms of providing for the online learning classes in schools, building classrooms that have ventilation, etc. All of this gives you a glimpse of what he can do as president, right? And he has been very clear. And all these allegations of being him being a Duterte-lite, etc., have no basis simply because he was very clear about EJK, about the rule of law, human rights. So we have someone who has prototype, who has proof of concept in his own city at such a short period of time. How can you imagine someone's able to build and generate revenue from 20 billion to 140 billion, 120 or so billion in a year? Isn't that something now that's facing us, the economy? Ang laki-laki ng utang natin is already at 13 billion. So trillion. So how much more? I'm sorry, I forgot the numbers, but ang dami ng utang natin. We need someone who's gonna roll up his sleeves and get the work done. And this is what's facing us. This is right in our staring us at our faces, and we have to address these issues. And he has proven that he can competently handle and manage this.
All right, Leon, talking about getting the work done and talking about the issues at hand. You know, the mayor is not the only one facing some issues here. The party itself is. What do you say to the observation that as Samira, as you yourself said, faced rough sailing the past couple of days, that the party, Action Democratico, wasn't there to support her, wasn't there to defend her, that you just left her to hang out to dry, not coming to her defense? How do you address that?
I think it's an unfair observation because, one, we've been talking with some almost every other day to make sure, and after there's an issue that erupts, we would talk right away. We would process what happened. We'd make sure that, you know, it doesn't happen. You know, and her concerns are valid. At a time, at a point, she did have, you know, she doesn't want to roll up that card, but she did. She was so bothered. She had some mental health issues herself. And she said this already, all right? It's not for me to divulge, but she said it's already publicly. So she was bothered to a certain degree. And I think it's understandable for someone.
But what did the party do for her? How did you come to her defense?
Our chairman was able to also explain her side. And at the same time, there was a talk already. We arranged. She had a good talk with our standard bearer and party president. In the Batangas sortie, it has been sorted out as well. And you could understand, and she was able to answer the issues lodged and questions asked during that sortie. So the party has been here for her. Again, at the end of the day, the explanation that our chairman Ernest Ramel gave was not picked up also by some outlets. So it's quite understandable. But the party has been here for her. We've been helping her a lot on certain issues and to process also, because we've been very clear. And I told her, Sam, you are invited to Action because there is so much alignment already when it comes to the principles. You don't have to second guess what our stand is because we are so clear on your stand.
So was she, did she communicate that to you, that she has in fact been second guessing?
No, she wasn't second guessing. She was just asking some of the things or the stand of the party in certain issues, which is understandable, Carmina. If you understand that, you know, when you're in a party, you have to ask what the party stance on or position on certain issues are. And that's where we're at right now. We have new people coming in. You're onboarding them on certain issues. We have a clear stand on certain policy issues. And in fact, to be honest, there are some issues that we still have to make a stand on.
Okay, let's talk about one of those issues. Yeah, let's talk about one of those issues now. As you very well know, the past couple of days, the discussions have been about Vice President Lenny and the left. May I ask you, what is your stand regarding the alliance with the Makabayan Bloc?
Right now, the party has yet to process our stand on the Makabayan Bloc. But at the end of the day, our standard bearer and the party has always maintained. When we were still talking, and ISCO wasn't even yet with the party then, we were very clear that we wanted to be inclusive. We wanted to be inclusive, that we were going to be open. But we didn't also want to have what we call carambola politics, wherein, you know, it's almost everyone supporting different candidates. We want to make sure that when we get senatoriables or senatorial candidates, that we are very clear about their stand on issues, that they want to support the legislative agenda that we put on the table, the platform, the minuscule platform of governance that we have. This should be the basis of alignment.
So, like
Makabayan would want, and there's an alignment on the basis of the platform of governance, at the end of the day, we welcome any and all sorts of people and sectors who want to help us, and us being able to help them as well.
All right. So, Leon, as things stand right now, how would you describe the relationship that your presidential contender, your presidential bet, has with the Makabayan Bloc and even the whole party?
They're with the whole party, and the lines are open. That's how we can describe it. The lines are open to their group. At the same time, the lines are open also even to other contenders. So we have always kept and maintained that we can work with anyone so long as, one, they're able to align with us on the basis of our platform of governance, and they can also pitch how they can help build that platform as well, because we don't want to have this monopoly of righteousness or monopoly of competitions. We're only the ones right. So it's an inclusive process. Two, we hope that when they come into our fold, when they go up the stage, they will support our candidate. So it's kind of, it's a very tricky situation, because you have senatorial candidates who are in the ticket of other presidential candidates. And the question now is, who are you going to support at the end of the day? So if they're going to support our candidate, our standard bearer, Isko Moreno, if they're going to align on us on the basis of our Bilis Kilos platform of governance, then we're all for it.
Do you think that's possible, though,
that
with Medi? We're running out of time, but I do want to ask this question, Leon. Do you think that is possible with Nery Colmenares and the Makabayan Bloc, considering that they are very clear on their stand regarding the Marcoses and the Duterte administration, compared with your principal, who has been quite ambiguous about his stand regarding these issues?
I don't think our standard bearer is ambiguous, Carmina. You can just Google it easily. He has been very clear about EJK. Manila doesn't have extrajudicial killings, and he has been lauded even by the diplomat of the US on his stand on human rights. Early on in his stint as mayor, he was very clear about it. We are once again trying to go into the pitfall or trap of being tagged as someone who's very unclear. He was very clear about the Marcos. He is clear about the praising the vision of Marcos, but at the same time, recognizing the atrocities, the economic downfall at the end of his term, and of course, going after the ill-gotten wealth. That is very clear. And I think his words could have been taken out of context, but when you look at how he mentioned and how he articulated this, even before certain interviews and even after that, the party and our standard bearer is always been clear. So if that is the basis of unity, I don't think there is a misalignment, so to speak, because one, we are very clear on the stand of the issue of martial law and the Marcoses. And even with Duterte, it's very clear. Isko himself has said, if there's going to be an ICC probe, he will open the public documents because we want freedom of information. He is willing for the country to go back and to be a member of ICC. So he already mentioned those. So I think it's a misnomer, once again, a misrepresentation of what he has said in the past, because we're very clear about his stand on issues.
Is this also a misrepresentation, the alliance that Jose Maria Sison, or the friendship that Jose Maria Sison has with Manila Mayor Isko Moreno? And also, just as a final question, when Joma Sison came out with, you know, a statement denying any involvement with Isko Moreno, why did he have to do that? And how did it help, if at all, the mayor?
Well, at the end of the day, we are the mayor has already expressed his stand on communism. He was a part of the panel to observe the peace panel there, and we are very clear on our policy on peace. We want peace. You can't talk peace if you hold a gun. Dapat walang barilan, walang patayan. We are very clear about that. So if you want to talk about peace, we have someone who's actually able to observe the process himself personally, and I don't think people should take it against him. In fact, it is a plus for him that he wants peace, lasting peace for our country as well. And I think we should all focus on our commonality, our thrust and our goal of achieving sustainable peace in our country.
Okay, we're going to have to leave it at that. We just ran out of time there. Leon Flores III, Secretary General of Acción Democrática. Thank you for joining us today. Take care. Keep safe. And that'll do it for today. Thank you for joining us. I'm Carmina Constantino. If you want to revisit today's episode, Dateline Philippines podcast is on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. Playback this newscast too on ANC's YouTube channel and on ANC 24/7 on Facebook. Keep safe. Keep it here on the News Channel.